I'm Eric Warrister.
This is Noam Schor.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam, another week has gone by. Where do we stand?
Two more losses for the Revolution, so they are well in the relegation zone. Had a miserable game at New York, which is not surprising to me, given it's the worst field in MLS, which I always find ironic, given the magic of Yankee Stadium. Just does not work for soccer. And then a little bit of a bounce back after some interesting midweek drama from the management. So a little bit of a bounce back in Toronto, but still two losses.
Right. The coach basically threw the team, threw the players under the bus before that Toronto game.
Right.
And you have to say, maybe it worked a little. They came out in the first half and looked pretty good. There were some lineup changes. And they really controlled a good portion of that game, but couldn't find a goal, couldn't prevent a goal. And there were still a lot of suspect play throughout the game. So even though it was a little bit better, it wasn't good enough.
Right. Yeah. And it was interesting because, as you say, Caleb Porter basically threw the team under the bus, questioning their mentality, suggesting that only certain types of personalities can show up when the stress is on, when the challenges are there, who's going to show up and be able to play. And it was really all about the team and the players, not about management, although he might have touched base a little bit on that and maybe acknowledged something. But something that we've talked about through the season so far is that just top to bottom, almost the entire roster is just not playing to the level that they have in the past. And why is that happening? And I was also wondering about what happened to the youth movement, because they haven't been starting. And so it seemed like a regression with some promising young players as well. And then you had these set of comments from the manager. Right, the first half of Toronto, I was pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed watching them. Their passes were zipping. They were switching the field quickly. Carlos Heel was dancing around and breaking some ankles out there. It looked like the team of old, but just lacked that scoring touch, and ultimately only gave up one goal, but of course scored zero and comes away with another loss. But I enjoyed watching them for the first time this season, at least for MLS play. I thought there was some potential. I saw something to build on.
We also got our first look at some of the new rules that MLS is instituting here.
Yes, new rules.
What did you think of, you know, some of the new rules about, you know, if you're injured, you have to go off for 2 minutes. Why don't you explain kind of how that works and what your thoughts are?
Yeah, so apparently this was a rule that was voted on last year or over the winter, maybe in December. And I'm not sure why it wasn't put into play at the beginning of the regular season, but they decided to launch these new rules now. And of course, a big part of soccer is our tackles, fouls, and players will go down and various states of drama, writhing on the ground in extreme pain to make a point to the referee or to maybe just get a breather. And so I kind of think it was a good idea. Like the new rule is that if you go down and you stay down for something like 15 seconds, you have to go out for 2 minutes. So you have to go to the sideline and be waved in after 2 minutes. And if you get treatment, I think it's like 3 minutes. So if a trainer comes out, then you're out for even longer. And not only do you have to wait those two or three minutes, I think you have to wait for a stoppage in play for the referee to bring you back in.
Right. So it could easily be 5 minutes that a player is off the field.
Yeah,
after getting fouled. And you, of course, have identified a potential major issue with this rule.
Yeah. Well, there's two issues for me. One is there's always which I find humorous, is just the trainer coming out and with this magic spray, this can of magic potion, will spray the area of the bruise and suddenly the player can bounce right back and all is good. Just the magic water, the magic spray. It's such a part of soccer. I just kind of enjoy that part of the game to some degree. So we'll see less of that. But more seriously, the issue now is that you could see, and this happened with the Revolution, that there's actually a reverse incentive to now really hurt players, to take them out of the game, because they can be out of the game for, like you said, up to 3, 4, 5 minutes potentially. And so if you want Carlos Heel out in the 85th minute, foul him hard. He's going to require treatment from the trainer, and he's out of the game. And that happened to the Revolution, where a player got hurt, and it was an extra time in the second half at the end of the game. And the Revs had to play at a disadvantage after being fouled.
It almost seems like at a minimum, there should be an exception where if you're behind, you shouldn't have to wait the 2 minutes. Because what's the advantage,
right,
of wasting time when you're behind? There is none.
But whether you're ahead or tied, there's an incentive now for the other team that you can take players out for a period of time. It's kind of like a reverse penalty in hockey. Like if you foul somebody in hockey, you go out of the game. Soccer doesn't have that. This new rule doesn't have that penalty for the person who instigated the foul. They're still on the field, but if they hurt someone, the person who gets hurt is out.
That's right. Maybe at worst they get a yellow card or something, but right, you can take a playmaker off the field. I get the intent of the rule is to prevent time wasting, but you're actually creating circumstances for more physicality and a higher likelihood that a player is injured intentionally, because you can gain that advantage by sending them off for, as much as 5 minutes, perhaps.
Right. Yeah. Remember when Henry Kessler, in a very humorous moment, it was in their supporter shield season, he took a ball off of the sideline that was about to be thrown in, and he just punted it or threw it into the stands as far as he could, right, to delay time. It was this great moment by Kessler. Just it showed how he was bending the rules. He got a yellow card, but he successfully wasted time, or at least allowed the defense to reset and to be prepared. But you can see, like, that's just kicking a ball way out of bounds. There's an incentive to do that, so you can make the connection that people are going to be taking risks now to take certain people out of a game.
So that's the new rule. This was, I think, the first weekend with that in effect, and we'll see how it plays out. But I agree with you. I don't think it makes a lot of sense the way it's structured. I just think it creates all the wrong incentives, and we'll have to see how that one plays out. Now, I've been thinking a lot about something that's not a rule, but maybe should be, and that is this whole trend over the last, let's say, 4 or 5 years, where when there's a free kick and the defending team sets up a wall, a player will lie down on the ground behind the wall so that the wall can jump, effectively making a bigger wall, and the shooter can't, just roll the ball under the wall into the goal, which the Revs actually got victimized by one of those earlier this year. They didn't have,
right,
a guy lying down behind the wall jumped, and the opposing player just rolled the ball into the net. So I don't like this rule I don't like this play of having the player lie down for two reasons. One, ties into player safety. So that player is often lying on the ground facing the goal, so with their back of their head exposed to the ball. So unlike going up for a header where you can marginally control the force and direction and position of the ball striking your head, and there might be a little more, skull coverage in that area.
Right.
You're lying on the ground with your back to the ball. If the ball jumps and the ball is kicked on the ground, you're essentially risking a blow to the head in the back of the head with no advance warning, essentially.
Right. Right.
Which seems to fly in the face of a lot of concussion safety and other things. Also,
although I will add, yeah, though, that there's probably very little incentive to try and kick it low with somebody on the ground, because the players can't jump that high. So the space between the person lying on the ground and the feet of the other defenders who are jumping, it would be a very, very, very hard shot. I think you just really have to go high on that. But yes, a miss hit or trying to curl it around on the ground, something like that. Yep.
Right. But also, when is there another circumstance in soccer or in any sport when there's a player lying on the ground as part of the action? Intentionally.
Been seen until this play became somehow it got adopted worldwide. It's only in the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, it just seems contrary to something core to the nature of sports.
Yeah, the aesthetic of
And
it.
yeah, and you're also strategically, taking a defender out of the picture. So, the offense, if there's a rebound or anything happens, like you could risk a mismatch.
Right.
The other thing I don't like about it is I like the idea that the shooter and the wall are having this chess match, or maybe it's more of a checkers match, right? Will
Yeah.
they jump? Will they not jump?
Right.
How much does the goalie have to account for the ball going over the wall?
Right.
And so I think you lose a little bit of the strategic element there by having a player lay down. And I just, but fundamentally, I just think it's bad aesthetically to have someone lying down on the ground. Normally, when there's someone laying down on the ground, the team kicks the ball out of bounds, the ref stops the game, we get back to that injury situation. So it just
Right.
seems something uncomfortable about, there's something uncomfortable about it. And I'd like to see that banned.
Yeah, I could see that, and maybe this new injury rule, because technically, if you're lying down for 15 seconds and you're out for 2 minutes, maybe that would apply by default. It is kind of an odd play. And even we were talking about hockey earlier, like often players, especially in the playoffs, will slide to use their body to block a shot and sacrifice their health as a result. But they're not lying there like during the play. It's when the shot's happening. And so you could do that in soccer too. You can
They're
position
making an
yourself.
athletic move to impact the outcome of the game, whereas in this
Right.
case, someone could be just lying down in a sleeping bag or something and trying to block a shot. The best thing you can say about it is because they're facing away from the goal, they're not going to get it in the face. So it's a not in the face situation, but I think that back of the head thing matters.
I was wondering about that too. If I'm lying on the ground there, do you want to just wait for the shot, not knowing exactly when it's coming or where it's going? I mean, the other players in the wall are facing forward, so why wouldn't you want to face forward on the ground? Now you can put hand over your face. It's not likely that the ball is going to come to your face anyway, because at that point the kicker has to go over the wall really to score. I would want to see the action, actually. It would make me nervous just waiting for that kick.
The impact. Yeah, I mean, you can hear it, but some of these shots, if they're relatively close in, could be 55, 60 miles an hour. And you're only, let's say you're 11 yards away because you're 1 yard behind the wall.
Right, right.
So it seems pretty
And then,
uncomfortable.
yeah, and then there's the opportunity, like the wall jumps. What if the ball hits somebody in the wall, they fall backwards, they end up stepping on the poor defender who's on the ground, or if they just don't jump well, that's actually, you could be cleated by like four players at once if something, bad happens during that wall jump. You certainly wouldn't want to be taking a free kick, I think, waiting for the sound when Lionel Messi's taking a free kick. Like, it's going to come so fast. You just want to be better prepared.
Yeah, well, I would say don't worry, it's not going to hit you. It's probably going in the net. Not in the face. That's maybe a good mantra for the Revs this coming weekend when Messi and Miami do come to town, because Miami's in first place, 18 points from 10 games. The Revs have 4 points.
1 point from 8 games. Oh, four points.
The
Who
Revs
did they
have
win?
4 points from 8 games, 5 goals and 3 assists through 8 games. Miami with 18 points from 10 games and really playing well. And this gets playing well, but in spurts. So this gets to something else we've talked about, which is how meaningful are things like expected goals. And there's a really good, if you look at the power rankings on MLSsoccer.com this week, they point out that Miami is 19th in expected points per game. They are 21st in expected goal differential and 22nd in expected goals allowed. But it just doesn't matter because a lot of these games they've been playing, you know, they've been playing Messi for, you know, between 20 and 50 minutes, let's say 5-0. So when he's on the field, I feel like the stats are completely the reverse of that. So, you know, they may be down 1-0 and then they put in Messi in the 60th minute and they win 3-1, something like that.
Right.
I feel like that's happened multiple times with that team. So
yeah,
if you have a difference maker, then a lot of these probability-based statistics are sort of worthless.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. I've been questioning those stats, and they actually, during the Toronto game, rolled out a new one, or maybe it's been out there before, I hadn't seen it. There was a total sprints count. I'm not even sure what that means. Does that mean Carlos Hill sprinting down the wing? Like, that counts as a sprint? That counts as something? That means something? Hmm. Is it an indicator of how fast the team is playing? I was quite perplexed with the sprints, the number of sprints.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I guess maybe it's a proxy for how aggressive the team's being, or how much in the attack a team is if they have a lot of sprints. Say back to the Miami game this weekend, you know, 66,000 plus at Gillette Stadium will be there. And I think the expectation is that Messi will play. But what do you expect from this game? I mean, Miami's in first place by a mile. The Revs are in last place, also by a mile. And do you think the Revs show up and make a fight of it? Or, and maybe Miami kind of looks past this game? Or are we in trouble here? Could this be a blowout?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've been thinking about this game in two ways. One, it's just going to be awesome. I have never seen Messi play live in person. So far, it looks like he's not on the injured list coming out of this weekend. So expecting at least some time on the turf at Gillette. So that's going to be great. I think everyone's just going to be super excited about it, the whole stadium, right? That's why everyone's coming.
Right, exactly.
And yeah. I think the Revs, I mean, what an honor to be able to play against Messi. So I think they will be fired up. I was going to put a prediction out there that the Revs have been so below their quality level that they can play. They started to show something against Toronto. I forgot to mention earlier that Porter also put in Noel Buck, who unfortunately got injured at the end of the first half, and Esmir. So a little bit of the youth movement was back and looked pretty good. I think there could be an upset in the making. On the flip side, I could easily see Miami up 4-0 at halftime and Messi is subbed out and we don't see him the rest of the game.
Yeah, it's a really tough call. I mean, so my prediction, I'm going to go out on a limb and make a prediction. I think this will be a 1-1 tie. And I'm really just trying to balance, you know, pro sports rarely gets too far out of whack between the really good teams and the really bad teams, because I think that mental dynamic just kicks in where the good team starts to let up because they think this is going to be an easy game. And if you're in last place, you know, you got 60,000 people there. This game, everybody's watching, so you know this is a chance to really shine and maybe escape. You know, maybe if you want to get traded or transferred, and you know, this is an opportunity to get on tape and show people what you can do. So
right.
I think the Revs will be competitive. I think they'll fight. I just don't think they're good enough to win right now. I think especially, you know, there've been some lineup changes recently, which I think are positive, but they kind of reset the clock on that gelling of the team and the lineup. And given the problems they've had at goalkeeper, I know there's some new signings just announced today, a goalkeeper and defender, but I think it's going to take more time. So I see a 1-1 tie.
1-1 tie. All right. So
you care to get on record?
So that's on record. Two predictions, a surprise Revs win or a blowout by Miami, if I'm allowed to do both.
I don't think so. You can't do both. That's not, you just predicted they'll either win or they'll lose.
Well, there was some detail there, but I'll stick with my Revs upset. I am concerned about players getting a little amped up in a unsuspecting Matt Polster red card in like the 25th minute, just disrupts the whole game. But I think they're going to keep it together. I think the Revs are going to pull something special with the largest crowd they've ever had for a regular season game in the entire history of the team. It's going to be a great evening.
It's going to be great, and hopefully they can buck the trend of not playing well in front of large crowds, which is not just a function of this roster, but something that goes back over really 22 years, back to the 2002 MLS final, which was at Gillette. So should be an exciting weekend. Looking forward to the game. It should be a lot of fun, and we'll talk to you soon.
Enjoy the game, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warista and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warista and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warista. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England Revolution.